Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this special holiday edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast on this 4th of July, 2016. Again, happy 4th of July to everybody out there. Hope you enjoyed your day and, you know, enjoy some fireworks, some barbecue. A rare holiday edition show, a podcast for us, but, you know, listen, when you have the likes of a Kevin Durant signing with a team that won 73 games the previous season, you basically have no choice but to come on and talk about it. And that's what we're going to do for the next 60 minutes. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald, or go to Instagram and follow me at Real Gerald Quinn. We hope to have Javon Alford on in the next around 10:15, 10:20 to talk about this and talk about some other things that were going on in the NBA in regards to free agency. Of course, Kevin Durant was not the only news in free agency today and over the past couple of days, but certainly Kevin Durant is, you know, he was the big fish. And was caught, of course, by the Golden State Warriors. And listen, you know, you saw history today with the NBA, because this is something that, frankly, has never happened in the history of the sport. We've seen trades where guys sign with other teams back, you know, in the 80s or draft how Larry Bird how Magic Johnson ended up on the Lakers, things of that nature. We've seen teams get fleeced. I mean, Red Auerbach with the Celtics used to make a habit of fleecing organizations and getting the best players. But of course, that was then. Organizations are much smarter now, for the most part. Those type of things just don't happen anymore when it comes to superstar players. Again, never in the history of the NBA have we ever seen a team who was historically great in the regular season. We understand what happened in the finals, but historically was the best team in the league, and I still think the best team in the league, despite what happened in the finals, get the number one free agent in his prime, and a guy who is a surefire Hall of Famer, top two or top three players in the league. We've never seen this before. And that's why I think that's part of the outrage of Kevin Durant going to Golden State. Because, I mean, besides the fact of the rich getting richer, this is just something we've never seen before. It doesn't compare to anything we've seen before. Matter of fact, we haven't even seen an opportunity like this occur since, you know, I would say 2003, when Jason Kidd was coming off a finals appearance, was in the prime of his career, and had a chance to go to San Antonio, who was coming off a championship back in 2003, And I don't remember hearing anybody complain about Jason Kidd even thinking about going to San Antonio. And they were coming off a championship and had the best player in the world at that time in Tim Duncan on the team. I hadn't heard nobody complaining about Jason Kidd possibly going to San Antonio. Now, he didn't go. Resigned with New Jersey along with Alonzo Mourning as San Antonio. I see, you know, San Antonio was not able to pick him up. But that's the only time that I can think of a situation that even came close to this, having a player in their prime as the number one free agent sign with the best team in the league. You can call Kevin Durant what you want, but, you know, we've heard some of the stuff. We've heard the easy way out. We've heard fraudulent. We've heard just all kinds of nonsense. in terms of what in terms of some of the criticism shifted towards Kevin Durant's way. The bottom line is he wanted to win. And I'm not going to knock a player who puts winning first and foremost. There's no debate or discussion that playing for Golden State gives Kevin Durant in 2016, 17, and beyond the best possible chance to win a championship. As a matter of fact, multiple championships. Period. That is not even up for debate. This had to happen this year because neither Kevin Durant nor Golden State would have been in a position for this to happen after next year. Let me tell you why. Golden State, following this season, following the 2016-2017 season, would have had Steph Curry, Andrew Bogut, and Andre Iguodala would have been free agents following in 2017. Not on top of the fact that they would have had to give Harrison Barnes close to $100 million. A guy who, in essence, is the fifth best player, or maybe in some cases, maybe your sixth best player on the team. Probably the fifth best player. You really want to give Harrison Barnes $94 million? Because they would have had to sign him had they not chose to go in the direction of going after Kevin Durant. They would have had to sign him. You can't let an asset like that walk away for nothing. So this had to happen now. From a Golden State perspective, it was a no-brainer. From a Kevin Durant perspective, you won't find a better situation than going to Golden State in the NBA. Because not only does your skill set fit with what they do almost to a T, you're going to a team that first-class organization, knows what they're doing, is building a new arena in 2 years, and to players who you actually not only get along with, but who want you to come to join them. And who are all, with the exception of Andre Iguodala, and he's not one of their core players. I'm talking about their core and Clay, Steph, and Draymond Green, all are 28 and under in the prime of their careers, having already won a championship. You know, I mean, again, you're not going to find a better situation, maybe ever, for a free agent who has opportunity to go to a team. It's just not. You may never see something like this again. I mean, seriously, the things that had to, and it's amazing, like the things that had to happen to fall into place for this to happen is unbelievable, especially in terms of Golden State. Like Golden State had to lose in the NBA Finals. They had to, you know, have Steph Curry on basically a bargain basement contract, you know, at 4 years, $44 million. So there were a lot of things that had to go in order for this to happen. You had to have Andre Iguodala, You had to have Andrew Bogut, who only has one more year left on his contract, be able to move that salary, despite the fact that he's an aging center. If Andrew Bogut has 2 to 3 years left on his contract, that contract becomes harder to move. 1 year left on his contract, it's easy to move. How about if Harrison Barnes signs the extension that the Warriors offered him last fall that this may not have been able to get done? Think about that. Harrison Barnes was offered $63 million extension last fall. He turned it down. He signs that extension. This probably doesn't get done. Again, trying to move Harrison Barnes. Again, that would have been a movable contract, probably a more movable contract than the Andrew Bogut contract. But it would have been trickier. I don't get the sense that a lot of teams would have tried to help out Golden State, considering that, in terms of getting allowing Kevin Durant to join a 73-win team, to be honest with you. Andrew Bogut was easy. He has 1 year, and then you can get rid of him. That's $11 million. A cap space that Dallas will have for 2017 when you will have guys like Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul and Blake Griffin on the market and Steph Curry. This was to me a no brainer from both sides. Maybe emotionally, it was a tough decision for Kevin Durant to leave Oklahoma City after 9 years, to leave Westbrook, who he's close to, Nick Collison, who he's close to. Great organization in terms of Oklahoma City, first class in terms of what they do and how they run their outfit. But from a basketball standpoint, this was easy. This was not hard. And you say, well, you know, the old man, non-millennial, is going to say, hey, we don't beat them, we join. We don't join them, we beat them. Well, again, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, first of all those guys played with multiple Hall of Famers. People always leave that out. The fact that Michael Jordan played with two Hall of Famers in Dennis Rodman and also Scottie Pippen, who helped them win 6 championships. Magic Johnson played with as much talent as any player in the history outside of Bill Russell has ever played with. And Larry Bird had a Hall of Fame backcourt, had a Hall of Fame frontcourt, and a guy in Dennis Johnson who's also a Hall of Famer. Nobody wants to hear about, well, we would have did it this way, wouldn't have did it that way. Those guys didn't have to jump to other teams to win championships. Their franchises were ready made to compete and win championships year in and year out. And again, other than Jason Kidd, no other player in the history of the NBA can relate to the opportunity that Kevin Durant had. No other player can relate. So I don't want to hear, from other players, whether it's Paul Pierce or somebody else, knocking Kevin Durant for this move. You were not in this position, so you don't know what you would have done. If you had no rings after 9 years, people criticizing you left and right because you haven't won anything. They're calling you just a great scorer and not a great player. Kevin Durant had to make this move. He had to go to Golden State. This was a no-brainer. I don't know about you, but I prefer to work smarter, not harder. So I go to a team, I eliminate one team in terms of competition. All Golden State has to do now, all Kevin Durant has to do now is beat two teams. You got to beat San Antonio, you got to beat Cleveland. He stays in Oklahoma City, they have to beat Golden State and San Antonio. And it improves San Antonio at that, with them getting Paul Gasol. And again, who knows what that team, Oklahoma City team, would have looked like with no Serge Ibaka. I think a lot of people are just assuming that Oklahoma City would have been better off with no Serge Ibaka I know Victor Oladipo is a nice player, but Serge Ibaka was a great rim protector. He allowed them to play a small ball lineup that with Kevin Durant at the 4, Ibaka at the 5. And Ibaka played very well in the playoffs last year against Golden State. And even in general in the playoffs, Ibaka had a nice run in the playoffs. So we're assuming that Oklahoma City would have been better with no Serge Ibaka. The bottom line, the thing that cannot be argued is the fact that Golden State, Kevin Durant on Golden State is better than Kevin Durant with Oklahoma City. That's not even debatable. And again, we have become a greedy sports, as sports fans and people who blog and fans, we've just become greedy. It used to be, we criticize guys for not winning. We criticize guys for taking the money. We criticize guys for being selfish. Now it's gotten to a point to where we're going to criticize guys for wanting to win, but not winning the way that we think that they should win. We're giving style points to winning now. So if Kevin Durant goes out there and wins 2 to 3 or 4 championships with Golden State, what are we going to say? Hey, he was supposed to win, or these championships don't count, or let's put an asterisk next to these championships because he joined a great team, or joined a team that was already a championship caliber team. They already won a championship. I mean, again, I don't remember anybody talking about you know, Magic Johnson winning a championship in 1980, like, comparing championships. That's what we're going to do now. Compare, you know, a 88 championship to a 1985 championship. Or say, what if this wouldn't happen? Nobody cares. You know, ultimately, it's about winning. It's not about how you got there. It's not about, you know, what transpires. Kevin Durant is in the prime of his career. This is not John, you know, he's not some role player jumping on a team and winning a championship. It's not Clyde Drexler with Houston, going to Houston. And I don't have a problem with Clyde Drexler, but we know Clyde Drexler was not the best player. Was on the bandwagon for Hakeem Olajuwon. We understand that. We are now joined by Javon Alford. Javon Alford of Real GM does a lot of work for them, does some great work with them, and also was on with us earlier with the finals, the preview of the finals. That seems like a long time ago now. Javon, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, man. And yeah, like you said, the last time I was on, I think it was before the beginning of the NBA finals, and it's just been a whirlwind in the NBA ever since then.
Yeah, a lot has transpired since you know, June 2nd. Javon, you know, when you hear, you know, over the course of the season, when did you get the sense that this was going to happen? Was there a turning point? Was there, you know, Jerry West? Was it, you know, Kevin Durant saying basically, I don't want to do this next year? Was there a turning point for you to say that, hey, you know what, I think he's probably going to go on to Golden State?
I think the turning point happened for me. I always thought that the turning point was going to be what happened in that series against Golden State when we're moving into the Western Conference Finals. I always said that if they got destroyed in the Western Conference Finals, then I could see Durant, you know, leaving. But if they gave it a good try, a good fight, they fought hard to the end, then I could see him staying. But, you know, we kind of got the middle of that because they didn't get destroyed or anything, and they did fight hard, but they coughed up a 3-1 series lead. So I think them coughing up a 3-1 series lead in the way that they did, losing three straight games to a game seven, I think that showed him a lot that, you know what, like, maybe this team is only good enough to get to the Western Conference Finals. Because the last time he went to the finals was back in 2012. That was a totally different Western Conference back then. Now we're in a different Western Conference, it seems like, and he's probably looking at it like, you know, maybe we're just that good. Maybe our ceiling is just the Western Conference, and the ceiling isn't towards the NBA Finals. So I think it kind of changed his mindset of believing, I think, happened in that series.
So you think that it was a possibility that he felt like this Oklahoma City team had reached its ceiling and that they could go, they just couldn't go no further, despite the fact that they came so close, and despite the fact that they traded, you know, Serge Ibaka to get, you know, getting Oladipo and what have you.
Right. No, I totally agree with you, and I'm glad you brought up the Ibaka thing because I actually think that was the next domino to fall in that decision. You know, Ibaka was a part of that, you know, 2012 NBA Finals team. We all remember that team, James Harden, Ibaka, Durant, Westbrook. Obviously, Harden took the fall for that series, and what did he do? He left. He got criticized for his performance, and he left. And then this summer, we see Ibaka get traded, and, you know, it was the next domino to fall, and you're just like, what is OKC doing? You know, why would they get rid of someone in Ibaka, you know, and make a trade for Oladipo? Now, is that trade, you know, obviously they got a lot back from Orlando in that trade that helped definitely upgrade the team. But Ibaka was here when, you know, they were all together, you know, from the jump. So I think that was the next kind of domino to fall that, you know, helped made his decision to, you know, leave. And now we'll see what happens for both parties.
Javon, I mentioned this earlier before you came on. I don't think people realize how urgent this decision was, not only for Durant, but for Golden State as well. A lot of people might look at this as a decision of luxury, saying that Golden State already had a championship caliber team, and they were, you know, a minute, a Kyrie Irving shot away or a LeBron James block away from winning a second straight championship. But the bottom line is, you look at Golden State, what they were looking at after this year with their free agents, there's going to be a lot of question marks. Like, you have Steph Curry, who's going to be a free agent, Andre Iguodala, a free agent, Andrew Bogut, and on top of the fact that they would have had to give Harrison Barnes probably close to $100 million in terms of matching the offer they gave him. So there would have been a lot of question marks going into the offseason and in terms of the future for that Golden State in terms of who they should keep. Obviously, Curry, you know, they're going to keep Curry, but you couldn't sign all those pieces and go after Durant next summer. Like, I think a lot of people might say, well, why not wait for Durant? Why not Durant wait for another year, or why not have Golden State wait another year until 2017? That was not the case. I think this, you know, with those contracts being up, that was just an impossibility, it seems like, considering the salary cap and considering what it could look like for Golden State next year in terms of the offseason.
Oh no, you're right about that, and that's a point that I haven't even heard no one bring up yet. You know, about, you know, how the contracts and stuff go forward, because Steph Curry, like I said, is going to be free, and you already know Golden State's going to try to find a way to pay him, because you look at his current salary. You know, I think he's the fourth highest paid player on that team right now currently. So you know he's due for a major upgrade and pay raise. That's going to happen, no doubt. But like you said, you know, why would you, you know, spend close to $100 million on Harrison Barnes? No disrespect to Harrison Barnes, but you know what I'm saying? Why would you go what the Mavericks went from, which I think was 4 years, 96, so 4 years, $100 million, pretty much close to $100 million.
94. I think they went 4 years, 94. They gave him a max deal. So they gave him like a, you know, gave him the max deal that you can give to a guy that's not your own free agent, basically.
Right. So, like you said, why put yourself in that situation where even if you say, for example, you do resign Harrison Barnes, you can't go after Kevin Durant in 2017. There is no way, because how are you going to trade that contract of Barnes? Nobody's not going to take on that much money if you want to trade him next season. So, for them, they're saying, okay, let's weigh the possibility here. What do we do? Do we keep Harrison Barnes or let him walk? Well, we let him walk. He gets his 4 years, 96, 94, and now we get Kevin Durant for 2 years, 54, and he opts out after year one. He has the option to do that. That's not a bad deal. It's a pretty good deal, and I think that there was a report that they're also trying to move Andrew Bogut as well to free up some more money.
He got moved. He got moved. Here's been the ramifications.
Oh, good.
The fallout of this move, if you haven't heard, Andrew Bogut was moved to Dallas, so he's going to be with Dallas. They signed Zaza Pachulia for like $2.9 million for 1 year.
Yeah, saw that.
They re-signed Livingston. Livingston got re-signed. They used this special exception for $5.8 million for 1 year. So they, like, they, you know, they lose Barnes, lose Azili, trade Bogut, but were able to keep Livingston and also sign Pachulia, who, and without question, will be their starting center. So that's kind of like the moves that they had to make in order to make this thing happen to Durant.
Right. Yeah, they totally had to. And then I think I saw a reporter I think it was Stein or someone say that there are like free agents who are willing to take the mid-level exception to play for Golden State. So, so obviously they're going to get more pieces in the table. So everybody's freaking out like, oh, the Warriors gutted their team, you know, just for one player. If there's free agents that talk about playing for the mid-level exception to join this squad, they're not going to be bad. It's like what David West did last season. He took a small deal to play with a good team in the Spurs. So it can happen.
You know as well as I do, and we saw this even with Miami over the course of a couple of years when they were surrounded their big three. There will be guys lining up to play with this team, like especially shooters. Here's the thing, folks. The hard thing in the NBA, and the Boston Celtics are found this out, and a lot of teams are finding, or have been finding this out for years. The hard thing to do is to attract, to get a superstar franchise player. That's a hard thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can make a case that they have three legit franchise players, and a fourth one, as far as Draymond Green, in terms of who they are just a notch below that. And they in essence have four of the top 12, top 15 players in the league right now. So they've done the hard part. The easy part now is filling out the roster. That's the easy part.
And like you said, look at the Miami Heat. Players were signed up to play there at the lowest. I mean, who did he have? Ray Allen, James Jones, Eddie House, Mike Miller, Juwan Howard. How many times we saw Juwan Howard still lacing them up every year for the Heat? He was there, and then Golden State's going to find the same thing. They're going to be able to get good players to just replenish that bench. So it's not going to be a worry. And like you said, they got four great players on their squad. And unlike what Miami did, Golden State, four out of the four, three of them they drafted, which is just remarkable. And that goes down to that talent, to the staff, and to the development, how they were able to develop these players to become who they are, to be homegrown superstars.
No question about it. You have to give their management all the credit in the world for having the foresight to see this coming. They understand. Listen, they took advantage of the system. It's amazing with this situation. This is something we have never seen in the history of the NBA. And I was saying before you got on, the closest thing that I remember seeing this that almost happened but didn't happen was when Jason Kidd was a free agent in 2003 and San Antonio was coming off a championship. Jason Kidd was at the top of his game, a best point guard in the league. San Antonio lost David Robinson, so that gave them the cap space to be able to go out and sign a max-level player. And, Kidd turned him down to re-sign with New Jersey for the max deal. But that was the closest I've ever seen a player of his magnitude going to a team that was the best team in the league. And I still think Golden State, despite the fact that they did win the championship, was the best team in the league, in my opinion. So this is something this is uncharted territory for the NBA. We've never seen anything like this. The number one free agent going to the number one team in the league.
Right. You totally have it. And I think, like you said, it's just going to be, like you said, the Warriors took advantage of the system and, they played the game well. And I mean, Jerry West, the logo, got a chance to speak to Durant. And anytime, like I said to people before, anytime the logo speaks, you listen. You listen to what he says. He was the same guy that got Shaq to leave Orlando to come to L.A. So obviously he knows what he's doing. And he's part of that, management and stuff that helps find these talented guys. And they just do it. They're good.
Yeah, no, they're tremendous. Now, the other side of the coin is Oklahoma City. You have a top five player in Russell Westbrook. You have some nice young pieces, with Oladipo and Sabonis. And, of course, Adams has a chance to be an all-star. We all know how good a player he is. But the bottom line is, right now you are a fringe playoff team at best, first round. And, first round, maybe at best with being kind. It's already been reported that Russell Westbrook will not sign the extension, the max extension.
Nope.
And rightfully so. I mean, he can go out there and you got to see what the team looks like. And also, he can go out there and sign it, become a free agent. I'm sure he wants to become an outright free agent. Do you move Westbrook before the season starts? Because to me, the later you wait, the less his value is. If you wait until the trade deadline, you certainly can't wait until, before, the next offseason. So do you expect to see him move before, September?
I would have to think OKC is going to try their hardest. Sam Presti came out, saying, that Westbrook's a leader. Yes, we know it's a leader, and this is his team going forward for a foreseeable future if he does not get traded. But if you got to think about your Sam Presti, if Westbrook is not even going to, like you said, he's not going to sign an extension. He doesn't even want to renegotiate or sign a contract extension. And that means he wants to be a free agent. You got to try to get something for him. We see it in sports. Would you rather let a player leave or try to get something back of value for him? So if you're a team like OKC, you should try to put out as many fillers and accept as many calls from any team that wants to call to see what you can get from them. Because I'm pretty sure you can get a nice pick or in a package of players for Westbrook. I think my friend, he my friend, he brought up a trade scenario about this, you know, Dylan Westbrook. He said something like the Celtics get Westbrook and Boston in exchange gives up, I want to say it was Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, a 2017 and 2018 pick. But it was kind of like a fair deal because Boston gets another superstar to fit, and then OKC gets a package and a package of picks, which they need, and players that can fit right in automatically.
No question about it. I mean, Boston has a lot of, has probably the most assets to give up out of these teams. You know, you'll see somebody, you're going to hear Boston, so of course, you're going to hear Phoenix has a number of pieces, has a few pieces in terms of draft picks, and also young players. You're going to hear, I mean, there'll be, you know, Minnesota has some young pieces. I don't know if he's going to trade Westbrook in conference. I think Westbrook probably would get moved outside the conference. But there, mm-hmm. I mean, there are a number of teams with young pieces and draft picks that will be able to, like, you know, OKC, you can make a deal for. I doubt. Sam, we've seen Sam Presti with guys in walk years. Durant was unique because they thought they could keep him. But James Harden, Serge Ibaka, the history of Oklahoma City says that they don't let guys go for nothing, and they're not going to let a guy in a walk year, you know, with a stretchy following losing Kevin Durant. They're not going to get nothing for Russell Westbrook. That's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's a matter of when they trade him, not if they trade him.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. It's a matter of when, like you said, and Presti, you know, he's done a great job of getting stuff back, like you said. And everybody, when they moved Harden, they were shocked, but look what they got back. Look what they're getting back from for Ibaka. They're getting a young big man. It's a bonus. A shooting guard and Oladipo who can play next to Westbrook if Westbrook is still there. But if not, you know, you can still play him at the two. And if you move Westbrook, obviously Campaign or whoever's going to be playing point guard, he fits right in next to him. Then they get another solid guy, Ilyasova. So, you know, they did. Presti does great jobs with these trades. So, like you said, if you're the team that's willing to give up what Oklahoma City wants, then, hey, you might got to pull the trigger because you don't want to let them walk for nothing, then you're really stuck in the hole.
What do you expect? We've already seen what San Antonio has done. They signed Pau Gasol, certainly, you know, as good as they could hope to get. Tim Duncan's probably going to retire, so you're probably going to see a front line with Leonard Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge, which certainly is not bad. It's tremendous in their own right. But do you expect what do you expect Cleveland to do? They just won a championship. But they do have a valuable commodity as far as Kevin Love, who certainly would attract interest in terms of what he get. Do you expect them to stand pat, or do you expect them to try and move Kevin Love?
I think for right now they're going to stand pat. I mean, Dan Gilbert's already said, you know, that he's going to try to keep this core intact for the foreseeable future. So we'll definitely see what happens. But I think for right now, they're going to keep Love, and I think what saved Love pretty much was his Game 7 performance. You know, it wasn't like he scored an outrageous amount of points, but I think we can all agree, he kind of reverted back to the Kevin Love of old in Game 7, which was not being a spot-up shooter all the time and actually getting in the low post, banging bodies and getting boards. You know, and I think that performance kind of saved him. So I think Cleveland right now, it's probably going to stand pat. I mean, obviously, they're going to have to fill in some holes there because they left Dellavedova walk because they're not going to match no $38 million with Milwaukee. So he's obviously there letting him walk. So you need to get a backup point guard, whoever that may be. I can't see Mo Williams being the backup point guard for the foreseeable future. So they got to do something there. You know, J.R. Smith is still a free agent, but probably, you know, he'll probably re-sign back there again, but they definitely need to upgrade their bench because I think that's been a weakness for them last year and even this year. I think they just need to keep on upgrading that bench because in the playoffs and the finals, we see when you're going against teams like San Antonio and Golden State, when they can throw out a starting five off their bench, you need to have a bench just as strong.
Yeah, they definitely. If I'm Cleveland, I would move Love to get younger, to get more athletic. Get pieces that take the miles off LeBron James. I think people, you know, we look at LeBron and we take for granted just how physically imposing he is as far as endurance and things like that. But at some point, the gas tank is going to run out. Like, you can't, like, he, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if LeBron was shot in 2 years based on just how much he has to do physically.
Mm-hmm.
Both his court, you know, 47,000 minutes. If I'm Cleveland, I'm really watching his minutes this year in the regular season. I'm just, it's all about the playoffs, you know, Cleveland. I don't care if I only win 45, 50 games. I think that they're going to be very careful in terms of how they use LeBron in the regular season. I think that they need to get younger and more athletic, get another defensive player, like, get a wing defender, another shooter, maybe, like you said, backup point guard, something like that, to take the pressure off LeBron so that you can save him for the playoffs. That's why I would move Love and go from there. I think Love, there are a number of teams that would still take Love. Has a pretty good contract, doesn't, you know, and on another team would be a legit number two or number one, could be a number one player on another team.
Yeah, I agree with you. If they have the opportunity to move him for a couple of young pieces, like you said, they got to, because like you said, LeBron is, you know, he's slowing down a little bit. And like you said, he's logged a lot of minutes. And I think we even saw in the NBA Finals, especially in Game 7, he was done. I think he played like 47 minutes or something like that. Like, he was done in that game.
Fourth quarter, he was tired. He even admitted to, you know, the Sports Illustrated article. He said he couldn't get the ball above the rim. That shot, like, his shots were
mm-hmm.
It was miraculous. Again, that 6-point stretch he had at 87-83, where he gets the 3-point, you know, gets the foul on the 3-point shot from Azealy, makes his three free throws, and then hits a three in Azealy's face. It seems like those were the only 6 points that he had. That was all he had left at that point. It seems like that was
right.
He couldn't give you any more from an offensive standpoint. Like, so he physically, you know, he physically was shot in that fourth quarter. As far as that goes, and again, we know the guy is a physical just specimen. We understand that this guy might be the best athlete to ever play in the NBA, but it doesn't matter. At some point, you know. Those minutes, those, you know, six straight years of the finals, that wears on you. So I think Cleveland, again, if I'm Cleveland, I'm looking to take the pressure off him moving forward in these regular seasons. I would not play him above 32, 33 minutes in the regular season.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Like you said, they got to – Tyronn Lue has to do the Greg Popovich method. I mean, we see Popovich do it. He doesn't care if his team is playing on TNT or ESPN during the week. He will rest his guys because he knows what the end goal is. It's about playoffs and about competing for a championship. So if you're Tyronn Lue, take a page out of Pop's book. Rest them. It don't matter what time it is. It doesn't even matter because Popovich rests guys even before his people. He'll rest guys because he knows it's all about the bigger picture down the road.
Let's talk about some of these other free agent moves that transpired. Horford to Boston, what are your thoughts on that?
I like the move. I like the move a lot. It helps that offense tremendously. Boston, we know, was looking to make a big splash. They have a bunch of rookies who they drafted the last two years, and they needed that other big star to help them ascend in the Atlantic Division and help them ascend in the Eastern Conference. I think Horford does that. He brings the element that they cannot get from an Amir Johnson, who's more of a defensive big man, of Kelly Olynyk, who's, you know, he's all right, but, you know, he's a role player. You're not getting that from Jared Sullinger. So he fits perfectly well in what they're trying to do, and it's only going to help that offense so much with Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley and all them. So I like the move. 4 years, $113 million. I love the move. I think it's going to be great for him.
Howard to Atlanta.
This one is interesting because I think this is like the least talked about signing of the free agency period, because it was just like Dwight Howard. Because Dwight Howard's kind of lost his step. You know, a lot of people say Dwight lost his step. Dwight isn't who Dwight was in Orlando. So I think it's a good move for Atlanta. Obviously, they lose Horford, and now they get a guy and Dwight Howard, who can be at defensive presence in the middle if he still got it, because now they have Millsap. You know, Millsap's still there playing the power forward, and Millsap's more of your offensive guy. So now you have, you know, Howard there, and you can imagine now what they can do if teams try to double team Howard or whatever he has. They still have Korver on the outside, and now you have a point guard in Dennis Schroeder who's a willing point guard who's willing to pass. So able to have Schroeder there as well, he can dish it out to Howard on some alley oops and, you know, pick and roll and whatever. So it should be fun to see what he does.
What about? I was curious about this one because I heard that we should not trust his knees. Chandler Parsons, $94 million to Memphis.
That one was interesting. Parsons to Memphis was interesting. Like you said, we don't know his knees. You don't know what his knees is. You don't even know if his knees are good enough. Well, obviously they are good enough if he got that amount of deal, but what can he bring to that team? So I think it's going to be interesting to see what he brings to the table to that Memphis team, because Memphis, you know, they're an older team as well. We saw them run through a lot of players last year due to injury, and a lot of people thought he was going to sign with Portland, but he spurns Portland and goes to Memphis. So hopefully he can give something to that offense, because right now you got to think, you know, Tony Allen is still their shooting guard, you know, Conley as your point guard, you still got Gasol and Randolph. Parsons need to give them something on the offensive end to get that to work, and hopefully Fizdale, the new coach, can, you know, put him in the right positions to succeed.
Do you expect Wade to go back to Miami? Because they've been talked about possibly Milwaukee with some of their young pieces. We know the Greek Freak is going to be an all-star at some point in his career. What do you think? You think he's going back to Miami?
Yeah, I think he's going back to Miami. I saw a report today that said that he offered Wade, you know, 2 years, $40 million. So, you know, he's got more than what he got, which was, I think they initially offered him $10 million or something of that nature. So he felt a little type of way about getting $10 million based on how the salary cap has went up and stuff of that nature. So I think we will be back. If the Heat are offering him two years of $40 million, then he'll most likely be back with Miami. He gets his money. They get to go make another run in the Eastern Conference, and that's all he wanted from the jump with his money, because he felt like he took a pay cut those other years when LeBron and them was there. So he'll be back.
How about a couple of teams? One team that made some moves under the radar that I really like, and I think they're going to be much improved. Indiana, they trade for Thaddeus Young, get George Teague, and sign Al Jefferson. I thought it was a friendly contract, 3 years, $30 million. Talk about those moves for Indiana for the Pacers.
Collectively, I like the moves for Indiana. I think they upgraded their team tremendously. I think Jeff Teague works well. Works well in offense. He's going to play, you know, Indiana's probably going to want to play up-tempo, and he's going to be able to play that up-tempo and give them something on offense. You know, George Hill, we knew he was going to give you something on defense, but he's not an offensive point guard, so that was already more pressure on Paul George to score. Now you have a point guard in Jeff Teague where he can actually score and put the ball in the basket, and he's an all-star. So, I mean, people forget he was an all-star, and I think he was dealing with an injury or something this season, and he still averaged 15.2 points per game. So I think the Jeff Teague move, it was great. I think that trade was great. And then, to get Thaddeus Young from Brooklyn, I think that's only going to help them, especially even if you have Thad playing starting a few games here and there, coming off the bench. That is just all hustle, all energy, all heart. Watch them play here in Philly. Was drafted by the Sixers. Watch them play a lot. I think he's going to bring something to that table and give them more energy. So I like that. And then Al Jefferson one surprised me a little bit, because he's just like, okay, Al Jefferson, Miles Turner, it works. It works because now Turner is going to have a big man who, you know, he can, you know, get some more mentorship and advice from. And Big Al still got it. You know, he might be a liability in defense sometimes, but Big Al can still get you a double-double on a nightly basis.
How about the Knicks? I understand the Rose signing or the Rose trade. They basically gave up next to nothing to get him, 1 year deal. Brandon Jennings, not a big deal, getting 1 year deal. Courtney Lee, nice player for what they gave him in terms of, I think they gave him 4 years for 40. I don't get the Noah 4 years, $72 million, considering his injury history. How about, what are your thoughts on that particular signing for the Knicks?
The Noah deal is definitely concerning, and it was definitely puzzling to a lot of people, especially, like you said, the injury history that he's had. And, you know, especially this season, you know, just the injuries he's been dealing with, nagging injuries. You know, you don't pay a player who's had the type of injury history that he had $72 million. You know, I don't care how much D. Rose wants him to come and play with him. You know, you're putting a lot of hope into a guy, hoping that he can stay healthy for majority season to pay off his worth and then hopefully help you get into the playoffs and or make a push to the playoffs. So I think it's a very risky signing for the Knicks. But that's been kind of like their motto this offseason, you know, high risk moves and hopefully they get rewards. You get rewards from it, you know. D. Rose, make a trade for him. They hope he stay healthy. You know what? They hope he stay healthy. Courtney Lee, how will he fit in with that offense? There's a lot of risky moves that they're hoping that it pays off. There's no middle ground for the Knicks. There's none. It either is going to work or it's not.
So overall, you know, of course, I mean, again, big winner by far and away, the Golden State Warriors with Kevin Durant. Do you feel like he will seamlessly fit into what they do, or do you feel like it will take the adjustment period will be a long adjustment period?
I think there will be an adjustment period. I think just like what we saw with Miami Heat, with LeBron and Wade and Bosh, when all those three guys got together, it was an adjustment period. It was, you remember their adjustment period, you know. As people say, there's not a lot of basketball to go around. They had to figure out how to play with each other and how to move off the ball when one person had the ball. And, you know, who's going to be that guy to take that shot? Who's going to defer to who in what situations? So I definitely think it is going to be an adjustment period for Kevin Durant, but I'm pretty sure it'll work it out. I mean, if you were in Steve Kerr's shoes, this is like the best possible problem to have, you know? You're not worried about who's hurt or anything. You're worried about how can we fit Kevin Durant into our flow of our offense. And the way that they play up-tempo, we all know Durant needs a ball in his hands, but I'm pretty sure you can find a way to have Durant have the ball in his hands sometimes, Steph had the ball in his hands at the time, and Draymond, we know Clay really doesn't need the ball in his hands. He doesn't need to come off and shoot, catch and shoot, and Steph can do the same thing. So I think there's a lot of crazy things that they can do within this offense. But, yeah, there's still going to be an adjustment period, just like we saw with LeBron when he went to Miami.
No question about it. One last one, Javon, if I let you go here. The NBA collective bargaining agreement won't be officially up until 2017, but both sides can opt out in December of this year. Based on what we've seen with the money and with, you know, these super teams, you know, with Golden State, you know, now and with basically no parity in the NBA right now. Right now, this, you enter the season next year with three teams that can win the championship. Do you expect the owners to opt out and opt out of this deal? Players certainly are not. Cause I can't see the players, you know, they're getting paid hand over foot. What about do you think the owners will opt out?
That's a good question. I mean, it's possible, but again, you know, the players are getting paid, and if the players perform well, then that means there's more money coming into the team and more money going to the owner's pockets. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's still the money flow is still equaling, getting down to them, and then the TV money. That's pretty much what's caused this. That TV money, which everybody was talking about, it's finally kicked in, and this is the result of it. Now, do I think there could be a lockout? I mean, who knows? You know, weird things have happened. Who thought the first time when we had a lockout a few years ago that was actually going to happen? And it happened, but it could. I mean, the cap is supposed to go to $107, $109 million. So just imagine these contracts were, you know, eye-opening to some, but just imagine how they're going to look like next summer. They're going to be more eye-opening. Probably going to see $200 million contracts.
I believe Curry and probably LeBron will be the first $200 million players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, those guys are both looking at $200 million contracts.
Right. Right. So after that, who knows? There definitely could be a lockout after that, because if you're getting $200 million, imagine how we're seeing now with middle-tier players like Evan Turner and company getting $70 million. That's only going to go up.
Well, how about not even lesser than comments to him? How about the guy from Miami getting like $50 million? I barely never heard of this guy.
Tyler Johnson.
He hardly played.
Yeah, I mean, he's a D-League alumni, so, I mean, a lot of D-League dudes have been cashing in, and Johnson cashed in big time, and it's because, you know, a few years back, Johnson wouldn't get, you know, a four-year $50 million deal. He's probably getting, what, like 2 years, 20 maybe?
What's that?
Four 24 maybe? Because there's only $6 million a year, but for him to get to 4 years, 50, that's a lot, and we've seen a lot of guys get that. Solomon Hill getting 4 years, 46, 48. I mean, there's been a lot of ridiculous money being thrown around this year. So there could be something that could be coming down the horizon with that.
Speaking of ridiculous, and I did want to mention it, but I have to be fair because I picked on the Knicks in terms of some of their moves. What the hell are the Los Angeles Lakers doing? Why in what world? Why would you give Timothy Mozgov and Luau Deng $33 million for two guys who are aging players when next year Russell Westbrook and Blake Griffin will both be free agents? Russell Westbrook will be unrestricted, and Blake Griffin, we all know, is going to opt out of his deal for the Clippers next year. I just don't, you know, I mean, is the buses, gym bus, you know, I just don't understand what's going on.
It's puzzling.
It just, you know, especially the Mozgov deal. I mean, Deng is a proven veteran, been a good player. But you didn't even have to give him, you know, 4 years, $72 million. You could have gave him 3 years, you know, $60 million, 3 years, $55 million. You even got a year and a couple, and about $15, $20 million cheaper. The Mozgov deal, just paying him in general, at 12:01, you know, right a minute after pregnancy started, is something to me was the most baffling move out of all the moves that were made. That one was the most, just had, you know, just had your wheel spinning.
Yeah, I mean, that was, like you said, for that deal to be the first deal off the board at 12:01 is kind of shocking, because, like I said, Mozgov 4 years, 65. You know, that's a hefty price for a guy who barely played this year. He had nagging injuries here and there, but Mozgov is not a $65 million center. Now, that's ridiculous.
Think about this. So Al Jefferson gets 3 years, $30 million. We know Al Jefferson is a much more accomplished and a better player than Mozgov ever was and ever will be. Zaza Pachulia I think people don't realize how productive he was. This guy averaged basically 9 points and almost 10 rebounds. He gets $2.9 million for 1 year. So the Lakers could have had him at basically maybe 2 years, $10 million, 2 years, $15 million. They would have overpaid him.
Right.
They would have got Warriors did. But the point is, I mean, that's just the difference in franchises. One franchise overpays a guy by about, you know, 30 or 40 million versus another franchise getting a player who's just as good, not better, for $3 million.
Yeah. And again, like you said, it's two franchises going in two different directions. And you see my one's on the top and the other one is struggling to get back in the relevancy. And it's still the bad contracts. I mean, everybody harped on how much money they paid Kobe, and yeah, on the upside, it kind of did look like a bad contract because it kind of stranglehold the Lakers, and now they're strangling holding themselves again. Now hoping that Mozgov can be something, and you know, dang, like you said, you could have got him at a little cheaper rate at the price that they paid for him, but he's a good veteran to have for that young team. He's going to provide a presence down there. You know, he can up his rate, and I saw this on. I read this on Real GM, you know, what helped his rate is that, you know, at Miami, without no Chris Bosh, he kind of played that de facto power forward. So that kind of helped his rate go up. Like, okay, not only he's a small forward, but in certain lineups, in certain situations, he can play that power forward. So I think Luke Walton is envisioning, well, if I create some form of my own lineup of depth, he plays that type of role where we could go small and he plays that de facto power forward, but still, paid a lot for him. Mozgov, like you said, they could have went a different route. with that pick. They could even draft it or a center, to be honest with you, and threw him in the middle instead of paying Moz off that type of money. They continue that youth movement that they have there.
No question about it. Javon, as always, thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
No problem. I'm always glad to be on here. Thanks again.
All right, take it easy. Javon offered joining us for the Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. Some good stuff from him. Again, listen, it's amazing. I've been thinking about this over the course of the show of how many things had to happen in order for this Durant to Golden State move, for Durant to get to Golden State. I mean, you just think about it. The television contract, the spike in the salary cap, Steph Curry having the best team contract and maybe in all of sports right now, considering what he's accomplished. I mean, the guy's only making $11 million a year for a two-time MVP. Think about that for a second. Two-time MVP is making $11 million a year. You have, Bogut's contract being up after next year. You have Harrison Barnes not signing the extension that would have paid him $63 million before the season started. A number of things. You had Golden State lose, Oklahoma City losing to Golden State. Oklahoma City wins that series and somehow wins the championship. I don't think Kevin Durant goes anywhere. Now, I don't think Golden State winning a championship would have changed his decision. I think they were going to go after him regardless. I think Kevin Durant would have went to Golden State regardless of whether or not Golden State won a championship or not. If Oklahoma City wins a championship, I think Kevin Durant stays in Oklahoma City. So a number of things that had to go in the favor of Golden State in order for this to happen. And that's what happens when history is made. Normally it's a number of things that go, that are part of history being made. And listen, we saw history tonight, today, with Kevin Durant going to Golden State again. First time that we've ever seen the number one free agent go to a team of this magnitude in the prime of his career, a team coming off 73 wins, a team that was within, Kyrie 3-point shot away from winning back-to-back championships. And again, it should make for a very interesting rest of the summer for the Oklahoma City. Yeah, I expect Westbrook to be moved. Sam Presti has no conscience whatsoever. This guy will pull the trigger in a heartbeat in terms of moving the players. He moved Harden, he moved Ibaka. He will not hesitate for a second in terms of moving a big name player. He's already prepping. This is a guy who's already getting ready for the future here. That Ibaka for Oladipo was a, yes, we're trying to improve the team now, but that was also a just in case Kevin Lee will have a young center. It's a bonus. We'll have a young player who doesn't make a lot of money in Oladipo. Again, those moves were cost efficient as well. Don't listen. You're trading the guy. Ibaka is going to make. They were not going to pay the Ibaka the max, regardless of what happened. They were not paying Ibaka $25-30 million next year. Oladipo's not making any money right now. Of course, bonus. He's not going to make any money. Ilyasova's not making any major money. So that was also, again, you got to look at when Oklahoma City makes moves. They're also cost efficient in terms of some of the moves that they made. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. Have a great rest of the 4th of July. I will see you next time. So long.